This is a CBC podcast.
I'm Duncan, by the way.
Hi, I'm Peter.
Ah, those crackling flames of a backyard fire. It's a great way to, forgive me, spark a conversation among old friends and new ones. But this gathering in Edmonton is a little bit different than your average get-together around the fire.
I really believe that channeling our anxiety and grief about the climate into action is not just productive, but like really so meaningful and heartening.
Chelsea Bowes is the organizer of this fireside chat for neighbors in Delton, in the northern part of the city. It's part of an effort to build relationships for the sake of climate resilience. Now, I'm wondering, Howard, is this kind of gathering what you mean when you talk about neighboring?
Absolutely. It seems to be the signature move among neighbors. While most of the year they just hang out, wave to each other, maybe a passing hello, a little help here and there. But it's this kind of gathering together on the block, maybe in the back alley or maybe on the street in front, where neighbors really kind of have a connection.
I can vouch for that. We had a block party on our street in the alley a couple of years ago, and it made a huge difference to getting to know people. But I'm wondering, Howard, do you consider yourself to be a good neighbor?
Yes. I mean, my family is great at neighboring, and we all play our role. And what's great is after a few years of everyone kind of playing a role in connecting with neighbors, the neighbors start to play a role, and there's a synergy of 20 households that continue to pull us together, even the quietest of neighbors.
And Heather, how about you? Are you a good neighbor?
I try to be a good neighbor. You know, I think just in the wintertime, clearing some snow away from other neighbors, and just recently appearing at a potluck when I didn't feel like I had the time, but I know that people put a lot of work into these events, and so I just wanted to show my support.
And what did you make? Did you have time to make something?
Oh, I sure did. pasta salad filled with vegetables.
Oh, okay. I wish I was there. Okay, today we're talking about the importance of neighbors, and not just because of the pasta salad, which I love, or the gossipy chats over the fence. The voices you're hearing are Heather Wheelaker and Howard Lawrence. They're neighbors there in our Edmonton studio. Heather's a program manager with the City of Edmonton's Change for Climate Project. Howard is a neighborhood resource coordinator with the city. And I'm Laura Lynch, and this is What on Earth, where we bring you a world of climate solutions. Today, why getting to know the people on your block or in your building can create a stronger, more united front when it comes to the hazards of a warming world. Heather and Howard, thank you both for joining me.
Our pleasure.
Howard, the City of Edmonton is actually leading the charge and trying to build these kinds of support systems. Tell me why Edmonton is starting the Neighboring for Climate movement.
We've all heard that axiom, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it actually takes a village to care for vulnerable people, seniors. It takes a village to create an economy, to sustain the environment. But it also takes a village to reduce carbon footprint, to attend to climate justice. So all of these things are really born out of the fact that neighbors are taking responsibility for their place. And as a city, we want to nurture and help that along.
Can you tell me what it looks like in action?
Introduce yourself. Go past the property line when you're shoveling snow, which really matters here in Edmonton.
I bet.
Host a backyard fire. We just heard about that. Another one that really works in neighborhoods, and a lot of people will chuckle at this one, no dogs' names. And lots of neighborhoods would say, you know, we are a neighborhood where everybody knows your dog's name.
But do they know the owner's names?
Yeah, exactly. Possibly not. And actually, that's an interesting phenomenon that we could talk about, because the nature of the neighboring relationship, the broader neighboring relationship, is one where we don't necessarily always know people's names, and we might have seen them for years, but actually knowing their names is not that important. Now, that's different on the block, where you probably should make a list of your neighbor's names so you can call them by name. So those are all ways that neighboring, I think, is manifest. But we're seeing awesome ways over time that we couldn't even imagine.
And Heather, do you know what kind of support and tools you're giving to people who want to start this in their neighborhoods?
Absolutely. So the Neighboring for Climate program was developed by citizens, with citizens, for citizens. We worked with a group of residents who came together and told us that they've seen enough strategies and they want to take action on climate change. And so this Neighboring for Climate toolkit includes a guidebook just to help you get started, and then a series of action cards that really looks like a deck of cards that are broken down into six different categories. And so we encourage residents who want to become climate connectors to start with the starter actions. If they don't already know their neighbors or they don't know very much about climate change, it's a great spot to start. And from there, they can work together on different actions. And the deck is set up so that you can pick and choose any action that you wish from the categories of emergency preparedness, nature and plants, food security, energy and fuel savings, and waste and water. There's really no right way or wrong way to use the cards. It's not one size fits all. It's really just to spark people into action.
And how many neighborhoods is it happening in?
Right now, we have 45 different neighborhoods and over 50 climate connectors. We only just launched the full program in April, so just 5 months ago, and we continually are seeking more climate connectors.
Yeah, I love that phrase, climate connector. This is the person who sits at the nexus in the neighborhood, right, trying to bring everyone together?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So you mentioned Delton again. Let's head back to that neighborhood gathering. The CBC's Pippa Reed, she dropped by the fireside.
Hi, my name's Marty Springstead. I'm a member of the Delton Community League, and I'm here to support Green Delton.
Why is that something that's important to you?
The whole idea of Green Delton is, what are things that everyday people can do every day to deal with climate change, or if you don't believe in climate change, deal with the reality of, I've smoked my air this summer. What can I do to make it better for ourselves? How can we live with this? And then let's get together and figure that out.
So Marty says it starts off with simple conversation. Howard, how does something like that go from climate talk to climate action?
Yeah, well, I think the most astounding discovery that neighbors have is the incredible giftedness and experiences that their neighbors have. It's jaw-dropping to know who lives around you. And those individuals, when they come together, it's kind of like a mini think tank. And they will come up with suitable, sustainable, workable solutions. And because you live close by, you can link arms and get these things done. There's inbuilt motivation and even accountability to do the things that you had hoped you could do to be a good global citizen.
Have you ever experienced a time when somebody who didn't think they had anything to offer when it comes to climate suddenly come up with something that they could help with?
Oh, one heartwarming one for me. A neighbor of mine who, well into his 80s, we were together discussing actually what would we do in case of an emergency, because emergencies come to us, whether they're climate-related or aging-in-place emergencies. He didn't feel like he had anything to offer. But as we talked, we discovered that he was the last person on our block that still had a landline. And landlines, in the event of an emergency, are an important tool. So he was able to offer up his landline.
That is something. And speaking of these kinds of emergencies, Heather, you have some experience with neighboring in times of need when disaster strikes. Can you tell us about that?
Well, and it's not firsthand experience, really, but I think you're referring to Hurricane Fiona that hit the Atlantic coast
right.
In 2022.
Yes. Tonight, assessing the damage from Prince Edward Island to Newfoundland to here on Cape Breton Island. Homes destroyed.
And so my mom, made landfall in her town, and she went from living in the middle of a boreal forest to basically a clear cut. So in the span of 10 hours, trees were knocked down. Power lines, of course, where power was out for 11 days. Cell tower service was gone. And so the community really came together. Young people were roaming through the town with chainsaws and clearing paths so people could get out so that traffic could move into the town as well. So there was my mom. She was just shy of 88, and she was helping her younger 70-year-old neighbors. They wanted some to heat up some water just so they could have tea or heat up some dinner. And so she's got a propane kitchen stove. And so that's how she was able to help others. And in return, this sounds small, but I would speak to her on the phone because she did have a landline, and she'd say, oh, I forgot to ask them to open up a can of soup for me, because she has arthritis in her fingers. So for her, it was an immense thing for someone to use that can opener.
Wow. That must have made you actually feel a little bit better to know how your mother was being taken care of by the community as much as she was helping others.
Yes, absolutely. It's perhaps a natural thing in a smaller town to just know each other and come together. And so I look at Edmonton, and I think when new people are moving into the city can be a big, scary place if you're new to it. And so I think that's why neighboring is so important. But in any case, it was while we were just having initial conversations with residents here in Edmonton to develop the Neighboring for Climate program. And I just thought, you know what, it just solidified that it really makes sense that we need something here in Edmonton.
Right. And I just want to stay with you, Heather, for a minute, because we know that climate change is starting to create conditions for more severe weather across the country, including the extreme heat and dry conditions that preceded the wildfire that destroyed so much of Jasper this summer. And there were other fires that blanketed Edmonton and large parts of the province in smoke. So, Heather, I'm wondering, how do people support one another during that time?
I think in Edmonton, we've almost become accustomed to opening our doors to others when they're in times of their need, and welcoming people in, setting up reception centers. And so Edmontonians, I would say, really understand neighboring. They also seem to be deeply concerned about climate change. We do an annual survey, and it's been going on for over 7 years, and 3/4 of Edmontonians continue to be concerned about climate change. So it's deeply rooted, the connection to climate change, but also being neighborly. And I think the piece that I think about is, are people thinking that could this happen in Edmonton? Because so far we've kind of escaped disastrous situations. And so I really want to work, and you know, the staff that I work with, we want to make sure that citizens here are also prepared.
Now, Howard, when we hear these stories about neighbors pulling together in the face of an emergency like a wildfire or a hurricane, it often just sort of happens spontaneously. People need help. People reach out to offer help. What do you think is the benefit of having a municipal government involved?
Well, I think it means that the municipal government is sensitive to the real lives of its citizens. As Heather mentioned, there is an inclination toward the neighboring relationship and toward helping each other. And I think when the municipality acknowledges that and supports and encourages it, really names it and says, this is a value that we have, and then even helps a little bit by saying, and these are the benefits of this neighboring relationship.
Heather, does it ever take the onus then away from city, provincial, and federal governments to actually play their roles in protecting residents?
Well, I think that each of us has a role to play in protecting ourselves. And if I look at the disasters that my mom has lived through, even this winter, 4 days being locked into her home. Now, she did have power, but there was 4.5 feet of snow fell. So nobody could get through at that time. And so the plows were breaking. The snow was like heavy cement. And so if she and others were waiting for the official first responders, they were waiting a long time. And so you could see through social media, people put calls out, I'm running out of supplies, you know, for my babies and so on. And someone would say, well, I have a snowmobile and I've got extra milk. And so I don't think the first responders are going to necessarily be looking after people at that scale or at that level. And so knowing your neighbor is really, really important. I think the first responders, they're trained in all sorts of situations, some of them dangerous, some perhaps not so. But let's, you know, leave them to do their work. And if the more that we can help each other out, it brings us together closer. It builds that sense of community. And it just helps, I think, each of us to know that we're contributing to something larger than just ourselves. So I think everyone has a role to play. There aren't enough first responders to go around.
Okay, let's go back to the get-together around the fire in Delton just one more time. This is Gail Silvius, an organizer with Green Delton, talking about how people are helping their neighbors.
We just use any excuse to do what people need. And so if it's like, we sewed curtains that were more blackout curtains so that their houses could be cooler. Then why not? Let's do that.
And that helps people cope not only physically in like hot conditions, but also mentally.
But because now you have a neighbor that you can talk to, right? So I know last year I got quite ill, and all of those neighbors that I gardened with, they were all coming to drop off food at my house. You know what? It's all slow. It's all incremental. And some people will garden, and some people will say, okay, I know how to put solar panels on the roof, and we'll just support whatever people want.
And those seemed like some pretty good examples. Howard, the program is still fairly new. How big do you see it getting?
Well, I think there's a neighboring movement in the Western world. And in my work with Edmonton, but also in other jurisdictions, we see just a momentum growing because, not just because of climate change, but also because of our young people, because of Vivek Murthy, the Surgeon General for the U.S., talked about loneliness being at epidemic proportions. We had a pandemic inside of an epidemic of loneliness, he said. But I think there's other reasons, you know, that this movement will continue to grow. And, you know, the question, what about other levels of government? Does this, you know, where are they? Or does this work at the neighborhood level, let them off the hook? And really, to the contrary, this is about neighbors and neighborhoods organizing and really growing in their personal power and the power to ask for the things that are necessary from other orders of government. When neighbors get together, it might be that they decide that they need to speak with elected officials. And again, the wisdom, the collective wisdom and intelligence of a neighborhood working together, having vetted different views at the neighborhood level, makes the neighborhood a formidable organized force.
Well, you sort of anticipated my next question, which is actually for both of you. But Howard, we'll start with you. How do you see this concept of neighboring fitting into the greater effort to combat climate change?
Humans are social. The neighboring relationship is a vital ingredient for our personal and our collective well-being. And so, yeah, I think that neighboring is vital and will continue to flourish as we see sparks become a flame, become, you know, larger in our, you know, our sense of well-being.
Heather, last word to you.
I think that while we can take individual action, and it's good to take individual climate action, the more we work together, the more hopeful we become that this is such, climate change is overwhelming in many ways. But knowing that there is something that I can do about it, and each smaller action starts to build into something bigger. And when we work together, we just become that much more resilient. And in some ways, it is about caring for each other, looking after one another, and buying into something that's larger than the individual.
Heather Wheeliker and Howard Lawrence, thank you both so much for taking the time to talk about being a good neighbor and what it can accomplish. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
That's all for us. Remember, the show is available wherever you get your podcasts. We drop 2 episodes every week. And while you're in there, leave us a review.
The show was put together by Rachel Sanders, Nick Logan, Matthias Wolfson, and Catherine Rolfson. And special thanks this week to Pippa Reed. I'm Laura Lynch. Thank you for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.